Hello, everyone. Welcome to this new episode of Radar, the podcast that brings you into Safran's universe and that covers all the topics that affect the group on a daily basis. And in this new episode, we will be exploring Safran's business model. How does the company operate? Which activities keep the business going? Which levers are put into action to ensure this success? Today, we will explore this fascinating topic with Pascal Bantegnie, Chief Financial Officer at Safran. So get your calculators and spreadsheets ready, and let's take a dive into Safran's business machine. Hello, Pascal. As mentioned in the introduction, you have been Safran's CFO since January 2022. So for just over a year, you have been at the head of the immense accounting machine that Safran represents. To get us started, could you provide us with some of Safran's key figures? Is it an enormous machine involving considerable sums of money?
Good morning, Kayla. Safran reported a strong set of results for year 2022, with a revenue of 19 billion euros, a growth of 25% year over year, an operating margin of 12.6%, which represents an increase of 0.8 point of margin compared to 2021, and a very strong free cash flow of 2.7 billion euros. We ended the year with a net cash position, the first time in Safran's history. When I compare to 2019, which is our reference year pre-crisis, our revenue is still down 20%, our margin down 3%, and our cash is even better, plus 700 million euros. In 2023, we are set for a strong year of demand, driven by an increase in aircraft traffic and an increase in production. We are set to increase revenue and operating profit by more than 20%, and cash is to exceed 2.5 billion euros.
Okay, so we're really talking about a big market, big numbers. And at Safran, you work on long-term projects, in particular on the design of innovative engines for the aviation sector. Can you explain the economics and sort of the timeline around this?
You're right, Kayla. The cycles are long in aerospace programs, usually more than 40 years. When an airframer is selecting an engine or a landing gear, it's usually for the whole lifetime of a program, starting from the development, the test, the entry into service. Then we have the original equipment being sold. And then at some point in time comes the aftermarket. Most of the revenue and margins are coming from the aftermarket. We have nearly no or very little margin when we sell original equipment, which come with a large discount. All the margin is made when we sell spare parts. So the large install base will guarantee future revenues in aftermarket. In an aerospace program, all the investments are made in the early days. This is why the cash break-even is usually coming 15 or 20 years after the entry into service.
So Pascal, you touched on the different branches briefly, and I'm curious, do all of Safran's branches bring in a profit, or are some more lucrative than others? Maybe you could give us a couple of examples.
Most of our activities share the same DNA, meaning high barriers to entry with very few players in that business. We usually enjoy a very strong number one, number two worldwide position in our activities. We enjoy as well a strong aftermarket activity, and we are in profitable businesses. Nevertheless, we also have some other activities with no aftermarket revenues, typically in aircraft wiring or in space equipment. The name of the game is then to sell original equipment with a margin, being profitable from day one, thanks to a strong industrial performance, having reliable equipment.
So, even as a world leader, would you say that your business model presents any risks? And if so, what are they?
We have a couple of risks. First, our model is based on aftermarket. So if an aircraft is flying less than expected, meaning that that aircraft will be retired before what we had expected before, then there will be an impact on the aftermarket business. Our second risk is that we would be unable to develop our future development. Typically today, we are ramping up the production of the LEAP engine, but at the same time, funding the renewal of that product, investing into the RISE engine that is to enter into service by 2035. The third risk would be to develop a product or an engine that would fail to be put into service after the development phase.
Well, I know that one of the key elements is also the makeup of your shareholders. Could you tell us a little bit about who your shareholders are and how that works?
Our shareholders are funding, to some extent, the development of the company. This is why we are meeting them during roadshows to discuss our development, our outlook for the coming years. We will return money to shareholders in the form of dividend, or it could be through a share buyback. And the progression of the share price is also one way to return money to shareholders. The primary shareholders of the group are the employees for 7% of total equity, the French state for 11%, and then most of our shareholders are institutional shareholders, usually in the US or in the UK, large pension funds like Fidelity, BlackRock, or Wellington. We have a relationship based on trust and transparency. We have more or less 20 sell-side analysts covering the company with a positive opinion on the group.
Thank you, Pascal. I have one last question, which is, what are Safran's long-term financial prospects?
First, we need to maintain our ability to fund our growth. I would say internal growth through research and development, CapEx, working capital, but it could be also external growth through acquisitions. We are a low leverage group. We want to maintain what we call an investment grade status. We also have to bring our loss-making activities into the black. During our capital market day back in December 21, we disclosed an operating margin target of 16 to 18% for the operating margin by 2025. This compares to 12.6% in 2022.
Thank you so much, Pascal, for being today's Radar. We'll see you soon for a new episode of Radar.